Hello, this is Catherine Price. I'm a health and science journalist, the author of books including How to Break Up with Your Phone and The Power of Fun, and I also write the Substack newsletter How to Feel Alive. A brand new edition of How to Break Up with Your Phone just came out, and so in honor of its release, I am here to share a book bite with you. As the author of How to Break Up with Your Phone and the parent of a 9-year-old, I often lie awake worrying about how technology is shaping our world and affecting the experience of being human. That's why I've been so relieved and excited to see the growing global movement of parents, educators, and lawmakers who are calling for an end to the phone-based childhood and who are advocating for more independence, responsibility, fun, and real-life friendships for our kids. But as many adults are beginning to realize, it's not just the phone-based childhood that's the problem. It's the phone-based life. While children and teenagers are suffering the most from all the negative effects of social media and too much screen time, their parents, and frankly, all adults, are as well. Indeed, it was my own personal struggles with my smartphone that led me to write the original 2018 edition of How to Break Up with Your Phone. One night about 10 years ago, when my daughter was just a baby, I had a moment when I noticed that she was gazing up at me while I was gazing down at my phone. And it broke my heart. That was not the impression I wanted her to have of a human relationship, let alone with her own mother. And that was not how I wanted to live my own life. I realized I needed to change, but I couldn't find a book that provided me with a practical solution. So I decided to write that book. I designed How to Break Up with Your Phone to combine an exploration of why our smartphones and apps are so compelling, and what our screen time is doing to us, with a step-by-step, evidence-backed 30-day plan for how to take back control. The goal is not to dump your smartphone completely, unless you want to. It's to create a healthier relationship with technology, in which your phone makes your life better, not worse. In the 7 years since the first edition of How to Break Up with Your Phone was published, I've heard from thousands of people around the world, from teenagers up to septuagenarians, that breaking up with their phones has helped them feel like they've regained control, not just of their screen time, but of their lives. Here are some of my top suggestions for how to build a healthier relationship with your smartphone, support others who may be struggling with their phone use, set a positive example for your kids, and be kind to yourself along the way. So gather your teammates, because phone breakups are best when done together, and get ready for a healthier relationship with your phone. Step 1. Define what you want. The top reason that most people's attempts to cut back on screen time fail is that they jump straight to hacks and tricks without first identifying why they're trying to change their phone habits, or what they want to be doing with their time. They set an arbitrary goal, my daily screen time must be 1 hour or less, and attempt to achieve it by relying on their willpower. But relying on your willpower is a reliably bad way to change a habit. Eventually, it will run out, and you'll end up back where you started, with the added bonus of feeling like you failed. The point is not to restrict your screen time arbitrarily, it's to reconnect with your life. Also, keep in mind that the people who design our most time-sucking apps make money from stealing our attention from us. And that's a big deal because ultimately, our lives are what we pay attention to. We only experience what we pay attention to. We only remember what we pay attention to. When we allow app makers to steal our attention, we're allowing them to rob us of our lives. That's why it's absolutely essential that you take the time to identify your motivation and your goals. Why do you want to change your screen habits? What do you want to spend your time and attention on? What would a healthy relationship with your smartphone and other devices look like? In my book, I encourage people to answer these questions by writing a breakup letter to their phone. It sounds silly at first, but it can be a surprisingly powerful way to clarify your motivations and goals. For example, here's a sample breakup letter that I included in How to Break Up with Your Phone. Dear phone, you fill my head with so much stuff that I can't hear my own thoughts. That's the thing I resent the most. Why should you get to dictate what I think about and when? I want to go back to a time when I had to entertain myself, to experience the way boredom breeds creativity, to learn the contours of my own mind and allow it to work at its own pace. I want the ability to stand still in a silent room, as silent as I can get with a 3-year-old anyway. As for my boy, I want him to see me and know he is seen. What's best for me is what is best for him too. It can also be useful, if upsetting, to calculate how much time you're currently spending on your phone and to consider both how this total compares to the amount of time you're spending on the things you just said you wanted to pay attention to and what the consequences will be if you continue with your current habits. Here's a calculator that can help. 1 hour a day adds up to 15 full 24-hour days per year. 2 hours a day is a month a year. 3 hours a day is a month and a half a year. 4 hours a day is 2 months a year. 5 hours a day is 2.5 months per year. And 6 hours per day is 3 months per year. That is a quarter of your time alive. If those calculations aren't sobering enough, consider just how much of your conscious life is being consumed by your smartphone. If you're awake for 16 hours a day and spend even just 4 hours a day on your phone, which is pretty typical, that means you're spending 25% of your waking life on your phone. This also means that if you were to compress your whole year's worth of screen time into just one chunk, starting on January 1st, in other words, if you were to do nothing but sleep and stare at your phone, the rest of your life wouldn't start until just after April 1st. Step 2, reconnect with real life. After How to Break Up with Your Phone, I wrote a follow-up book called The Power of Fun. I actually did a BookBite about it. In it, I write about how one of the main reasons we spend so much time on our phones is that we're not experiencing enough fun or connection in our actual lives. We're bored, even if we're overwhelmingly busy, and we're lonely. We turn to our phones to fill an emptiness that we feel inside. Unfortunately, instead of nourishing us, the dopamine drip of our screens only leaves us feeling emptier and more alone as soon as we look away from the phone. The good news is that the more fun you're having in real life, the less time you're going to want to spend on your smartphone. So what does nourish you? What feels fun? What and who makes you feel lighthearted? What are you curious about? What makes you feel alive? And also, what nourishing things can you do in quiet moments when you're alone, either by choice or because it's 9 p.m. on a Tuesday night? Either on your own or with your breakup partners, I recommend that you set a timer for 10 minutes and make a list of things you love doing. Make sure to include a few that you can do in your own quiet moments, such as reading or crafting. Also, write down things you're curious about trying. For example, maybe there's a recipe you'd like to try, or a class, or a restaurant. Or maybe you've been curious about experimenting with a habit, like meditating, or going for a regular after-dinner walk. Also, write down people you'd like to spend more time with, and ideally whom you might be able to invite people to join you for some of the things on your list. Not only can it be motivating and reassuring to realize that you do actually have interests beyond your Instagram feed, but this list will be an extremely useful tool to have on hand for weekend planning, as well as for when you find yourself in a moment of downtime when you would usually reach for your phone. If you're brainstorming with someone else, see if there are any things you could plan to do together, and then put those things on your calendars right then and there. Also, notice how coming up with the list made you feel. Many people report that it can be hard, at first, to come up with non-screen-based ideas, but that once they get started, the floodgates open. They report feeling relieved and, in many cases, excited. With that said, don't worry if it feels hard and you only have a few ideas on your list. More will come. Give yourself grace. Step 3. Make your phone boring. Part of the reason it's so hard to look away from your smartphone is that its apps have been deliberately designed to feel exciting. The reason they feel exciting is that they've been designed to manipulate your brain's dopamine systems, which is something I go into in much more detail about in the book. Some tech insiders refer to these dopamine-triggering tactics as brain hacking. So how do you fight back? Make your phone as boring as possible. Start by asking yourself what you like about your phone and want to keep using. Focus on apps that serve a tool-like purpose, such as maps or your calendar or your music platform or the camera or, you know, the actual phone. Keep these and use them as much as you want. I've been talking with people about their smartphones for nearly a decade now, and never once has someone told me that they waste hours a day staring at Google Maps. Next, delete or hide any app that you know is problematic for you. You probably already know the apps that are problematic for you because they're the ones that make you feel gross or guilty after you use them, but which you find irresistible. But if you want me to tell you what they are, here you go. They are probably going to be some combination of social media, the news, shopping, email, and gaming, maybe dating too. Not coincidentally, these are the categories of apps that have the most similarities to slot machines. If you're hesitating about deleting anything, remember, you can always check these things from a computer or browser. It's the apps that are usually the most problematic because they have so many features that have been specifically designed to hook you. And also, if you're the parent of teenagers, you've likely scolded them for how attached they seem to be to their problem apps. This is a great opportunity to role model the behaviors that you're trying to encourage. For added oomph, tell them what you've deleted and ask them to hold you accountable. You could even have a family challenge to see who can keep their problem apps off their phone the longest. As part of the process of making your phone boring, you'll also want to reduce your notifications, which I call interruptions, because that's really what they are designed to do: interrupt what you're doing and make you pay attention to your phone. So ask yourself, what is worth being interrupted for when you're in the middle of a project, when you're putting your kids to bed, when you're watching a movie with your partner, when you're laughing with your friends? Start with an absolute minimum. You can always readjust your settings. And don't forget to also turn off those red badges that tell you how many things are waiting for you in the app. Those are notifications too, and they're there to get you to go into the app. Note that they're the same eye-catching color as a stop sign or blood. This is not a coincidence. Once you've deleted or hidden problematic apps and reduced your notifications/interruptions, redesign your home screen so that it only contains apps that either serve a practical purpose or that help support a habit that you want to engage in, such as meditation or learning a new language or instrument. By the end of this process, your home screen should contain only tools, not temptations. Your phone will then be less like a slot machine and more like a Swiss Army knife. Step 4, create phone-free spaces. One of the main problems with smartphones and apps is that they infiltrated our lives so quickly and so thoroughly that we never even stopped to think about what we wanted our boundaries to be. As a result, it's nearly impossible to find any space or gathering that does not include smartphones. This is destroying our ability to be present and fully connected with each other, and it's also affecting our productivity, our memories, our creativity, and frankly, who we are as people. That's why it's so important that we begin to create boundaries. Thankfully, an increasing number of schools are creating phone-free spaces for their students, but what about at home? One suggestion is to establish dinner time as a no-phone zone for your family, including you and your spouse, and any guests. To make device-free dinners less punitive and more fun, provide alternative things to do. For example, you could create a system where every person in the family takes turns coming up with a question of the day. For my family, in addition to a bowl of conversation prompts, my husband and I also keep a jar of delights on our table with blank slips of paper. One of our favorite family rituals with our daughter, and for that matter with adult dinner guests too, is to start dinner by writing down our daily delights and sharing them with each other as we add them to the jar. Step 5. Start and end the day on your own terms. Right now, if you're like most people, your smartphone is probably the first thing you look at in the morning and the last thing you interact with before bed. If you can get your phone out of your bedroom and your kids' bedrooms, you will reclaim both of these times and probably sleep better too. If you're like most people I hear from, part of the reason your phone sleeps in your bedroom with you is because you use your phone as an alarm clock. But think about it. In order to silence an alarm, you need to touch the alarm. This means that if your smartphone is your alarm clock, you are guaranteeing that your smartphone will be the very first thing you interact with each day. So take a moment right now to get or find standalone alarm clocks for everyone in your family. Also, and this is essential, create a central family charging station for everyone's phones that is not in a bedroom. For example, my husband and I charge our phones in a closet. Next, make sure to put something that you want to engage with or do before bed in the spot where your phone used to be. For example, if you say you want to read more, put a book on your bedside table. That way, when you reach for your phone on autopilot, which you will because it's an ingrained habit, you will encounter a trigger for the habit you're trying to establish. This is part of our general strategy of making it harder to engage in the habits you're trying to cut back on and easier to engage in the habits you want to nurture. And as a bonus, reading a book for just 10 minutes a day will help you rebuild your probably atrophied attention span. Here's a tip. To make your kids more willing to participate, offer them some kind of reward if they ever catch you cheating, by which I mean if they ever find your phone not in the central charging station. For example, you could offer some extra allowance money or give your kids the pleasure of getting to assign you one of their chores, but warn them that this system works in reverse too. In conclusion, breaking up with your phone might sound daunting, but you also may be surprised by how quickly the benefits begin to add up. So I encourage you to grab a friend or family member and give it a try. As you do so, keep in mind that no relationship is ever perfect, and changing habits is hard, especially when they involve apps that are deliberately designed to make boundary setting difficult. Our relationships with our phones will likely always be works in progress, and that's okay. So make a plan to check in regularly with your phone breakup buddy about how things are going. And if you do fall back into an old pattern or habit, which, let's be honest, you probably will, don't beat yourself up. Instead, just notice what happened and decide how you want to move forward. The mere fact that you realized you slipped means that you're succeeding. Keep it up, and not only will you feel like you're modeling the behaviors you're trying to instill in your kids, but eventually you'll find yourself with a new relationship with your devices that reflects what you already know in your heart. The best parts of life don't happen on a screen. Thanks very much for listening. This is Catherine Price, author of How to Break Up with Your Phone, and I am wishing you all the best.